low dose. 36 chambers is the reason my flow's cold. Rugged and raw is the pigment I draw shit. Better watch your neck, cause I ain't nothing to fuck up with. Smooth criminal on beat breaks, but I won't be found like I'm Morgan Eagle's mixtape. Never getting caught, cut my hands red from nosebleeds. So close to see, these are thoughts from a thief.
Alright, hey, what's going on, all the lovely people out there? This is the Lowly SDR, and this is the Lowly SDR Podcast. Breaking down the divide in modern-day sales culture by having real and honest conversations with all levels of the power line about the topics that SDRs care about. This episode is brought to you by Above Ground, helping companies drive engagement through creative content, made possible by our partners at SDR Nation, John Barrow Sales Training, Great Insight, and Pre-Hire. If you'd like to learn more about Above Ground, helping with your podcast or next piece of content, check the link in the description for all contact information about Above Ground or any services provided by our partnerships. Make sure to use our discount codes and affiliate links so that you guys can save some money. Today is a big day for us. We couldn't be more excited about this week's show. Joining us is John Barrows, podcast master, sales training legend, and source of great inspiration to myself and my co-host, one of the wisest minds in sales. And here he is with us to discuss the broken nature of many SDR and sales organizations and what he would be doing if he were leading a traditional SaaS sales team. Welcome to the show, John. How are you living?
Hey, what's up, Eric, man? Thanks for having me on. Hey, what's up, Tyler?
Yeah, man. Of course. Pleasure is all ours. Before we get into it, though, I just wanted to give a shout out to your team. Tyler and I have worked with Morgan, James, and Chris in different capacities, and you guys are just all on top of your games. The attitudes are even more remarkable. So first off, I just want to say thank you to you and your team for everything you guys do and for making this happen.
Thanks, man.
Sales training is in a volatile space right now. Most strategies had to pivot. How did you find all these individuals that just exude this energy? And does it have anything to do with the John Barrows training model at all?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's actually a good question. I think for me, so first of all, I appreciate the feedback on that. You know, for me, everything starts with values. Early in my career, I wish I could go back and remember who told me to do this or how I came, how I ended up doing it. But real early on, I created this, my 12 personal guidelines to success, right? And it was, I wrote them out as my 12 personal guidelines to success in sales, business, and life. And what it was just a lot of my core value stuff, right? Which, one is work hard and smart. People say, I got to work smart. Now you got to work your ass off too, right? What goes around comes around, always ask for feedback, those type of things. And so what I did was I put those together and what it's kind of like the exercise a lot of businesses go through with what's your why? Like, why are you doing this, right? If you don't have a good why, then you're going to stumble all over the place. So my core values was a part of my why. And then as I kind of evolved, when I started hiring reps and those type of things, I would tell them, I go, look, I just want to let you know this is how I live my life. These are my core values. They do not have to be yours. But when feedback comes from me, realize this is where it's coming from. Okay. So because I always believe that as long as you align with core values, everything else kind of takes care of itself, right? Like you and I could argue till the cows come home as long as you and I have core values of what the core actually means. But if you and my core values are off, then it doesn't matter. Right. So because now all of a sudden we're just yelling at each other. I mean, I'll use a macro example here, like where we are with, with politics. Right. Like we used to all agree of what American core values were. Right. The Constitution and the core values of what it meant to be an American. Now you ask either side what's their opinion of American values and you get two completely different answers. Right. So now we're just yelling at each other and nobody's helping. Right. So with that, I take that lens on of who I look to hire. Right. And also who I look to partner with. I told Chris, right. I said, Chris, the first thing that we need to make sure of is whenever we partner with somebody, I don't care how much money they have. I don't care how much they're going to throw at us. Are they good people? Like, what is their ethos? Does their ethos match ours as far as our belief about this industry, our belief about sales, those type of things? And are they good people? Okay. That is literally the first thing. The second thing is now, does their solution fit into our ecosystem of, our atmosphere, if you will, of, would people use it, right? Because I don't want to just be a NASCAR logo sheet here and have them, anybody will give me money, take it. And then the third thing is, will they pay us for it? But that core piece right there is critical. And so with Morgan, when I was looking at Morgan, you know, he was up there on stage and he had written this post, interesting, and this is everybody's, you know, for personal branding and what it can do for you. You know, back 3 years ago, he was doing his SDR Chronicles, right, and getting that thing going, whatever. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. You know, hey, good for that kid. And this was well before everybody was cranking out shitloads of content around this stuff, right? And so I was like, oh, good for that kid. But then he did this one post, and I think it's actually still up there, about, because he had just gotten promoted to an SDR manager. And he said, hey, the top 10 things I've learned about being an SDR manager and an SDR. And he started spouting them off. And as he was listing them off, a lot of them aligned with my core values. Right. He's like, hey, always ask for feedback, you know, be a constant learner and all these things. And that one video, I was like, all right, that kid's got the core values. Now let me pay a little bit more attention to him. And then it's not like I put a job description and said, hey, I'm hiring. I actually found him on, you know, one day when we were both at Sales Hacker. I walked up to him after he got off stage one time. I was like, yo, you want to do what I do? And he's like, yeah. You know, I was like, cool. Well, come on board. And so that Chris is another story. I've known Chris since I was like 5 years old. So that motherfucker knows where the bodies are buried. And we've always had core values on that one. So, but you know, a lot of it starts with that. And it's the same thing with customers, same thing with partners. You know, once you align that, it makes it a lot easier to have a really meaningful relationship.
Yeah. Well, that means a lot to hear coming from you, John. And on that note, just wanted to mention our mutual excitement surrounding our partnership with the top brand in sales training and content, JB Sales Training. Check out the episode description for a link to the sign up for John Barrow's annual subscription model at a discounted rate, or feel free to reach out to Tyler and I with any questions that you have.
Is it that alignment with the customers that allows you to feel like they can be successful kind of after you leave their team? Like, I know it's that, yeah, it's like you motivate them, but then it's like, hey, you have the keys now. I've taught you the methods. Like, how do you trust that company to kind of live those sales methods that you've instructed them with?
Yeah, I think a lot of that has, yeah, I mean, I think the value alignment is important. I think the give a shit factor is real, right? Like, people who give a shit, look, I'll train anybody. If you want to give me your money, I'll take it, right? But the ones that I enjoy working with are the ones who care and the ones who really want to take this and run with it. You know what I mean? I'll give you a quick example. Like, I tell everybody at every training I ever do, and I've trained thousands of sales reps, hey, here's my email address, here's my Instagram. You have access to me at any time. You want to learn, you have a question about sales, ping me. I won't charge you a dime. I'll get to you when I can. Like, less than 0.2% of people ever take me up on that. It's like, and I tell them, like, look, and you can ask anybody who's on my Instagram feed right now asking for feedback and those type of things. I usually get back to you within 2 hours, like with a real meaningful answer. Oh, no, try this and da da da, right? I'm not going to get on the phone for 30 minutes with every rep who wants to talk. I just don't, unfortunately, have that kind of time, but I will answer almost all your questions. Same thing here. You know, I was doing this one training and I wrote a blog post on this one. This one rep, I'm standing in front of like 300, right? Morgan and I actually did the dual training on this one. And at the end, it was like 300 reps, right? Sales kickoff. And one of the kids raised their hand. It was for full Q&A. He said, John, you know, you train a lot of tech companies, SaaS, and actually a lot of our competitors. So how can we differentiate? If you're going to train us on the same stuff you're training on all these other companies, how can we differentiate? And my answer to him was 10-60-30. And he goes, what? I go, 10-60-30. I go, 10% of you in this room are going to take what I tell you to do and execute at a level and really excel. 60% of you in are going to do something different because it makes sense and it's easy. 30% of you ain't going to do shit different. So the question is not how many people can I train? The question is what percentage do you want to be in? And I gave up a long time ago trying to please everybody in the room, right? Like, Morgan had a hard time transitioning. And I told him, I go, you're going to start doing this training and you're going to, because it's good and you know you believe in it, right? Because that's what I fundamentally believe, that in order to be successful in sales, you have to believe in what you do, right? So when you believe in what you do, then it's the transfer of enthusiasm. And so when we got hooked on this training, it was like, oh my God, this shit works. Like, everybody got to pay attention. So I'd stand in front of a group of 30 reps. And if you were sitting in the back of the room with your, you know, playing on your iPhone or something like that, I would literally be like, hey, yo, Tyler, man, hey, come, why don't you come back in with us here, man? Like, I'm trying, you know what I mean? But guess what? You didn't want to be there. Right. So now I don't give a shit about those kids in the back of the room. I really don't. The 60 to 70% of the kids that are just showing up because they're told to, or this is the thing that they have to do because they're man, I could literally give a shit about kids who don't want to get better. You want to get better, I don't care if you're the worst kid on the team. If you want to get better, I'm in. I'm there for you. Like, those are the people that I look to train. Those are the people I look to connect with, is the people who actually give a shit. The people that don't, kiss my ass. And by the way, right now, I start every single one of my presentations off with death of the average sales rep, right? And it was my belief that the average sales rep was going to get replaced by technology, right? And I meant the ones who were just press and play on their cadences, making generic cold calls, press and play on demos, all that stuff. Well, now COVID comes, punches us all square in the mouth. And I'm not like, I feel bad, but I don't. Look, there are certain people that have gotten laid off because under no fault of their own, right? The company just had to do a restructuring. It was just a shitty situation. Their product went from a like to have to a zero, no need have type of thing. Okay, fine. For those people that were really trying and treating this as a profession and trying to get better and got laid off, you know, just because they were in a bad scenario, I genuinely feel bad for you, right? Mm-hmm. But for those reps that have been sitting there going through the motions for the past 2 or 3 years, pushing play on cadences, blasting out 1,000 emails just to try to hit their numbers and getting shitty leads and showing up at 9 o'clock and leaving at 5. Mm-hmm. If you're out of a job right now, tough shit. I don't feel bad for you.
Yeah. So there's actually a couple pieces of that I want to kind of pick apart. So first off, let's talk about the people that are interested in bettering their careers and their sales acumen. I think for us, it's just kind of natural. Like, we want to get better. Probably no matter what we're doing, we're going to learn from the best. We're going to learn from the people that are smarter than us, find people that are more successful than us. But I do think there are sales reps that just don't care. Yep. They have a mindset of, this is just my job. I'm not going to invest more money or more time into my 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't understand it. It's not how my brain works. But as far as John Barrow sales training and the coaching that you guys do, to have this treasure chest of content, Tyler and I both think that the pricing is a steal.
Thanks, man.
We've had the pleasure of taking part of a few of your webinars and things that you guys are putting out. Now, it's always fire. Mm-hmm. But there was this post on LinkedIn and where someone made a comment on it, if I'm remembering correctly, pretty much saying, why should we pay for this content? Yep. And obviously, I think that's ridiculous, but I don't want to. Mm-hmm. But I do think there is this kind of sentiment from the audience out there. Sure. So what do you want to tell people about this new kind of model that you guys are rolling out, almost a Netflix type model for JB mm-hmm. sales training, and why you think people should invest in their careers with you?
It's all about time, value, money, man. You know what I mean? I said on that post, you can go get a Harvard degree for free if you want to. You can go on a Harvard. You can literally take every single course mm-hmm. and get the exact same, you know, course, like learn the exact same things, but still shitloads of people try to go to Harvard every single day. You could go to a cover band at a shitty bar and listen to, you know what I mean, the Grateful Dead or something like that. Or you could go follow them on concert and spend the bucks to go to listen to their actual music, right?
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I pay for quality, and I pay for somebody who knows what the fuck they're talking about, how to walk me through this. Now, don't get me wrong, and I've said this to this day, and I'll say it to it again. If you have the time on your hands and you are smart enough and driven enough, 95% of what I train between my blog, my resource library, and my LinkedIn page, you could go put together 95% of what I train people on.
Yeah. That's
but
true.
Do you really want to spend 15, 20 hours trying to comb through all that content, figuring out where it all is and how to put it together in a logical format? No. And that's why people pay. And by the way, there's even a better reason why people pay for right now, because now every dipshit with a camera has training and thinks that they're a thought leader in this space.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Yeah. And I mean, you should go out and consume all that free content. That's not what we're saying. I think what we're trying to say is, if you really want the good tips, you're going to have to pay for that. Because when I'm thinking about how I might make a video about how to edit a podcast or do this on a song, I'm not going to give that to people like the deep secrets for free. You know, I'm going to try to get paid for that.
Right. Right. Well, it's kind of like, and there's also the factor of like the Napster factor. You know what I mean? Where Napster allowed, I mean, you guys are probably too young to remember Napster, but Napster.
No, we're with you.
Napster, like at first, I was like, oh shit, man. Like, I don't have to pay anything for this stuff. I can download any song. I can download any movie. But then you realized it was screwing the artists. And you were like, I don't feel right about this anymore. You know, and don't get me wrong. There's a whole bunch of people that stole that content. But there's going back to values, man. I don't give a shit about the people that don't value their own education, that don't value paying for things that they should have to pay for. You know what I mean? Like, I'll give you an example. Like, with this new on-demand platform that we got, right? It's $420 a year. There is absolutely, and we talked about this, and I did it for a reason, because fuck off. And by the way, if anybody out there is drinking, has a drink after work and chastise anybody else for smoking weed, you can kiss my white ass. So anyways, but there's a point where you just kind of like, all right, I should probably pay for this. You know what I mean? Like, but going back to the 420, one person could easily sign up for that, put 10 people in the office and watch all my videos and pay 1/10 of what they could. So they could do that, but that's not the person I give a shit about. And for me to lose that, revenue, I don't care. Because me barking up that tree, that's not the values that I care to drive towards. So somebody who says, "Oh, why would I pay for this?" All right, kid, go ahead. Good luck. Like that. I'm not saying you should. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm saying my shit works. I know it does. I got enough proof points here to show that in this format, the way that we've developed it and how we're adding that value is worth 10 times more than that price.
Yeah, it's not your ICP.
Right. So I think too many people get too caught up with the people that aren't really their ICP and stop focus. It's like competition. I was having this conversation this morning with my team. I can't tell you the last time I've actually asked about competition. No. I'm not joking. Look, I don't do product sales. If I did product sales, it'd probably be a little different. You know what I mean? Like, there's three different products. Who else are you talking to? But I mean, past six years or so, the times that I have I've learned about the competition if they've told me or whatever it is, but the amount of times I've physically said, "Hey, so who else are you talking to right now?" and then gotten sucked into that is minuscule. You know why? Because I don't care. Because early on in my career, for instance, I remember being so fixated on competition that I realized that I was selling. I ended up selling against my competition, not to my customer.
Right.
And what that took my eyes off of what the customer needed. Right. So then I got so fixed. Then I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Who cares if I lose? That means either A, my solution was not the right fit, or B, I wasn't good enough as a sales rep. So either A, I got to get better, or B, I either got to get better at positioning my solution, or I got to get better at finding the right client where my solution is the right fit. It's not because I'm not getting mad at my competition for winning that, or mad at my client for not doing business with me. I'm mad at me for being like, damn it, I should have been better at that. And that lens, that's why I got all the confidence in the world getting on a phone. Oh, well, we're talking to them. I'm like, oh, cool. They're good. Yeah, I like them. You know what I mean? Like, they're actually pretty legit. You should actually, have you asked them about these things? Because they do really well over here. You know what I mean? Like, okay. And a lot of clients think that that's like something like, oh, well, we're also talking to. I'm like, great, you should. Actually, you know what? You should talk to Keenan. You should talk to Richard Harris. You should talk to so-and-so too, because they're all fucking great at what they do too. It's all about fit.
Yeah, I think it validates your place in the deal cycle. And like, the reality is, if I'm looking at you and your two competitors, I'm going to buy from who I want to interact with more.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to sit there and ask John Barrows for his list of differentiators from the other sales coaching teams.
Yeah.
And I've heard that sentiment from some of the more intelligent people I've talked to. Gaetano says that a lot about like his marketing collateral. Like, I don't care what Jive's doing. I don't care what 8x8's doing. Like, we're talking about telephones here. If I can get you to care about me, you're going to inbound to Nextiva and figure out what we're all about.
I mean, Gaetano is a perfect example of where I believe marketing is going. And I think sales should actually be, and this is personal branding, this is, Morgan and everything else. I think companies are going to have to get very, very comfortable moving forward here, allowing an individual within their organization to represent their brand. Right. So there's the corporate brand, But then, and then there's personal brands, but then there's that one person within the org that represents that brand at a way that, that is going to help elevate them. And I'll use some easy examples here. I mean, look at, well, I mean, let's call out some easy examples of where they all of a sudden went whoop. And then, when that person left, and that's, this is the danger of that approach is, you know, like, Gong, right? So big fan of Gong, what Chris Orlib was doing, like, holy shit, what the data that he was putting out there, like, you know, and look, all their products are good, right? Gong, Chorus, those type of things. They're all good products. I really couldn't tell you the differences between a ton of them, right? But Gong, the perception was holy shit because what Chris Orlib was doing. Now, when Chris moved over to sales, all of a sudden there was this gap, this vacuum suck. Now, Devin Reed is filling that gap and he's doing a really good job getting it back on track. But for a while there, it was like, oh my God, Gong, and then everybody else. And then when Chris Orlib stopped, it was like, oh, it's everybody, you know. Now it's the same thing with Drift, right? Drift with DC. So DC is obviously an incredible CEO, but DG, when he was there, he was the brand. You know what I mean? He was Drift. And so if you think all the chatbots, like, okay, again, tomato, tomato, and some of them, again, don't get me wrong, Drift has some really cool features and that type of stuff and over Intercom and those guys. But at the end of the day, it's like, okay. But it was like, oh my God, look what DG is doing. And it was because of his personal brand and the content that he was putting out there. And so that's what companies, I think, have to get really, really comfortable with, is allowing their reps, their individuals within their organizations, to present themselves out there as value that then is associated with that brand. So to your point, all of a sudden people start to reflect on that brand in positive ways. And then when that inbound comes, it's because of that.
What do you think, like, leads companies to have so much opposition towards that? Like, what you're telling me makes complete sense. Like,
control,
I'm
control,
in
control,
that
control.
Space myself, but like, why? Like, why are you worried? As me as a rep, I'm trying to sell. I'm also putting my company out there to generate leads for you. It's in my best interest to only have good things to say, but I think the only way to sell is to be authentic with people. Yeah. So what's going to flip that switch for companies to say, okay, we're done controlling, go ahead.
It's the control factor. I mean, it is literally the, I mean, marketing, and look, I have a marketing background, right? I grew up in marketing. That's my degree. You know, it's all about controlling the message, right? I mean, that's the key. It's like, and that's why, you know, you find inauthentic brands who are trying to manufacture viral shit. You know what I mean? Because they just don't get authenticity is authenticity. You don't do a post on Black Lives Matter when you don't have a single black person on your goddamn team. You know what I mean? Like, you don't do that. You do it because that's what you've been doing. You know what I mean? And the people, it's like influencers. Like, if anybody ever tells you they're an influencer, they're not an influencer. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, and this is where, again, Morgan and I have a lot of thought. Like, we actually did a whole keynote on this, which is the answer is structure. So I'll give you an example. And I've said this a million times with Morgan, right? Like, my generation, Gen Xers, we grew up figuring shit out. Like, when I was bored in the house, my mom would kick me out of the house and say, go away, leave, and come back by dinner, right? Just don't burn anything, don't kill anybody, whatever, right? So, you know, I would go break shit, I would figure things out, right? Whereas this generation, millennials and under, every minute of their lives have been structured, right? So they go from school to this hour to this hour, then they have soccer practice from this hour to this hour, then they have their iPad for 30 minutes, then they do this, right? So literally every moment of their lives have been structured. And then they get out into the real world and managers like me look at them and say, hey, figure it out. And they look at you sideways like, what are you talking about, figure it out? Like, what do you mean, right? And so our reaction is, if you don't know what the hell you're talking about, well, then here's a script, here's a template. And if you give a kid who's been taught to the test their entire lives, right now with MCAS and all that bullshit, if you give a kid who's come out of there with that structure and you give them a script, that's what they're going to do. They're going to read the script. They're going to push play on the template. But so that's not the answer. The answer isn't scripts. The answer isn't figure it out. The answer is structure. Right. My generation, I don't like being in structure. You put structure on me and I try to break it. Okay. I like building structure. This generation, millennials and under, love being, they thrive within structure, but they fall apart without it. And I'm making very general statements here, but in general, they feel comfortable within structure and they execute within structure better than my generation ever would. Okay. So our job as leaders is to provide structure for the communication of how they should go out there starting to present their brand, but not tell them exactly what to say and how to do it. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, take these articles, here's these news feeds, this is what you should be learning about. When you learn something, share it with your context, and this is how to do that. And by the way, we're going to educate you, and this is how you connect business acumen to all this stuff, is that we're going to set up feeds of, like, say, Tyler, and you know, your territory is mostly financial services, and you got to sell to VPs of sales, right? So Tyler, we're going to actually going to feed you non-Sendoso information about what VPs of sales in that finance world care about, and what are some of the trends there. And so you're going to learn that stuff. And then when you learn things, then you share it, but only share based on what you learned, right? And the takeaways on that. Now you give that structure and you give that content. Now you got a kid who can go out there and start to absorb that information, get better at what they do, and share content in a way that is purposeful, but with some structure to it. And so that's where I think marketing departments are going to have to loosen up a little bit on their control of the message. And sales reps are going to have to fit within that structure so that they can start to build their brand in a more authentic way. For those of us who don't really have the passion or the drive to do it, you know what I mean? You give them that structure and they'll do some of it versus, you know, none of it.
Yeah, I think we see eye to eye on a lot of this stuff. Like, let's take a step back for a second, just exit yourself from that sales training space. Mm-hmm. Like, you're building out a sales team, selling like a traditional SaaS product. You mentioned that structure. Like, how do you build that out? Let's focus, I guess, specifically on like lead generation and like sales development teams. Mm-hmm. Like, what's kind of like the comp plan for them? What are their goals mm-hmm. as like individuals? And like, what are they working towards from like a company value standpoint?
Yeah, so I think it's interesting, you know, because there's so many layers to that as far as, you know, what you sell, who you sell to, what's your addressable market, what's your ICP, those type of things, and who the personas are going after. So I think to me, it's all about, you know, understanding what your equation is, what your ACP. I mean, you can do the basics, right, of understanding what your you know, what your goals are from an organization. I mean, this is what we do every single year. We say, okay, what do we want to hit? We want to hit 4 million. Okay, how much of that is going to be, you know, on-site versus, well, now remote versus online? What's our average deal size rate? So therefore, how many deals do we need to have? So then backing out, what are our conversion ratios? So, I mean, I think every company obviously has to know what their equation is. And then based on that, you then say, okay, each SDR, for instance, has to get a minimum of 10 meetings a month. Okay, cool. Well, then where do these 10 meetings come from? What channels do we have access to, right? And obviously cold calling and just cold outreach is one of them, but then what else? And this is where I think companies need to restructure a lot of what they're thinking about the value of SDRs, and where else can they be applied to drive insights or meetings or interest, right? And obviously there's the inbound stuff, right? And then there's the outbound, but then there's existing customers. There's the data right now that is, you know, hopefully most of our organizations are just rich with data. They just don't know what that data means. And so you unleash these kids on figuring out what that data, looking at the trends and finding people who have engaged with your content in some way, shape or form. So I think I would structure out their 30, 60, 90, 120, 360 day plan. And have it be very, so my 30, 60, 90 always is, you know, first month you talk to customers and you interview internal resources. So I fundamentally believe that you can't sell something until you believe in it. And so therefore, what I did with Morgan was, here's our top 10 customers. Instead of spoon feeding you what our ICP is, what I did with Morgan was, I said, Morgan, here's our 10 best customers. And it's not just because of revenue. Here's our 10 best customers. I want you to now go interview each one of these customers and figure out the commonalities. Why do they do business with us? What value do they get out of us? What's their structure internally? Those type of things, right? So with that, he went out and interviewed 10 of them. And then he came back to me with basically this report that said, here's the commonalities. This is why people do it. So now when he goes out and he gets his list of in his territory, he's not just starting at number one and calling through that list. He's actually calling into like a list that is very targeted to our persona of our ICP, right? And tiering out our accounts, tier ones, tier twos, and tier threes, the good ones, the average ones, the crap ones. Then I said, okay, well, what personas do we go after, right? CROs, VPs of sales, and VPs of enablement. Well, instead of giving him the piece of shit one slider of, hey, Sally, she's a VP as a sales and she cares about revenue, you know what I mean? And having some like bullet point about what those people care about, I said, Morgan, go do research right now on what VPs of sales in the SaaS industry care about in 2020 or whatever, back in 2018. And same thing with VPs of enablement. So what did he do? He got on LinkedIn and said, hey, I've never sold to VPs of enablement. How, you know, anybody out there willing to spend 15, 30 minutes on the phone with me so I can understand what VPs of enablement do, right? He had like 50 people chime in. Yeah, Morgan, absolutely happy to help, right? So then he came back to me with a report, every single one. Hey, this is what VPs of enablement care about today, not in general, but today, right? So now he has context for these conversations. So that would be my first month. My second month would be a volume month, is just to see if your ears can bleed for me, right? I mean, I'd figure out that equation and figured out, you know, mine was 400 dials a week, got me 8 meetings a month, got me 4 proposals, got me 2 pieces of closed business. Based on that equation, I would say make 400 dials a fucking week, right? Or emails or whatever it was. And I really wouldn't, I would give you some guidance on messaging and that type of stuff, but not, I first and foremost, because as a manager, I have to determine whether it's a quality issue or a quantity issue based on how I manage you, right? And the easiest one for me to cross off the list is a quantity. Can you do the work? So I'm going to beat you over the head for about a month or two to make you make 400 hours a week just to see if you can handle this. And then if those numbers don't flush out, because 400, right, should flush out into 8 meetings, whatever it is, if that doesn't flush out after a couple of months, then I know it's a quality issue. But if you've only made 200 dials, 250 dials, I'm going to tell you to get back on the goddamn phones. You know what I mean? And so then, and in my comp plan, you know, you kind of ask on the comp plan, it kind of, it evolves with your growth. At first, it's a numbers game. It's how many, like, I'm going to just pay, I'm going to give you a decent base and I'm going to pay you per meeting, right? Just per qualified meeting, that's all you get, okay? And it's a numbers game. We're going to figure out what good, yeah, what, how many number, how many email, all right, cool. Now, once you hit that, those metrics, then it's a more of a quality game. So a few months later, I'm going to start to pay you a percentage of revenue that comes in from those deals that you got, right? Now, it's not going to be a huge one, but it'll be a couple of percentage points on the deal, depending on how big the deal is too, to get you focused more on quality, because then that's going to be a transition for you to go into the AE role to know what clients, and then I'm going to push you a little bit further along where you're going to sit on demos with the AEs. You're going to actually sit on that transition call with the AEs, so you're going to learn that and then, you know, evolve from there. So that's kind of my general overview of how I would approach things going in.
Yeah. And actually want to touch on a couple points that you made, because I agree with you 100%. But I think it's a perfect transition into taking a minute to thank some of our sponsors. You know, there are companies out there that are doing it right. And one of them being SDR Nation, who will be powering some of our episodes. We are thrilled to be working with the SDR Nation community. As an SDR, you aren't really given the coaching you deserve. Many SDRs don't have an experienced manager or the tools you need, which can set you up for failure, honestly. And it's really hard to get promoted in that role. This is where SDR Nation comes in. SDR Nation is a private, membership-based community for high-achieving and motivated SDRs who want to level up. Here's what you get with SDR Nation: exclusive and intimate coaching from the best sales development experts on social selling, cold calling, experimental prospecting, inbound selling, and sales career progression. My co-host Tyler Cole is one of the founding coaches helping SDRs get promoted through his career development channel. Please email Tyler at tyler@sdrnation.com to talk about getting involved. Well, God bless you, John Barros. I mean, I think that is the perfect way to kind of structure an SDR role, you know, like beat them to the ground, see what their strengths and limitations are, and then you move from there and, you know, kind of give them incentives to prove themselves first. I don't think, you know, I like that idea of not just giving them close one percentage right off the bat. Make them earn their keep, and then, yeah, then let them in on the pie. So I guess I have two questions. So why do you think companies don't do that, first of all? And then, like, how do you view the SDR role in its entirety, like, today?
I mean, I think the reason that a lot of companies don't do that is pure laziness. You know, my perception right now, just based on what I've seen out there, is that we're in a weird... Well, I'm going to take COVID out of this equation for a second here. Yeah. Let's table that for 2 seconds. I said even before this that I thought we were in a weird transition phase. Technology was we're in the manufacturing where, you know, manufacturing guys used to put widgets and I'm the best widget thinker and, you know, and but we were teaching the machines and we never thought that the machines would take over, right? I think SDRs are in that same position. They're, you know, push and play on their state cadences and say, no, you know, and a computer can't do this awesome cadence that I just put together, and that's just horse shit. So, you know, so, and also managers like me, again, I'm 44 years old, Gen Xer, right? I think everybody understands that quality is the issue here. Okay. I think quality is the, quality is the answer, right? You got account-based marketing, you got personalization at scale, you know, you get all these things where inherently we all want the Amazon experience, right? We want to be able to be communicated the exact way we want to be communicated with exactly what we need. And we want to push a button and have it say, see you later. Okay. So understanding the quality is the answer, but also understanding that quality is really hard to coach to. As a boss, it's, you know what's easy for me to coach to? Hit your 50 dials.
Yep.
Did you make 100? Did you do 100 activities today? Because it's easy, right? You either did or you didn't. It's a very objective thing. But for me to coach you on quality, that's a pain in the ass. I got to listen to your calls. I got to sit down and do actual coaching. And if I'm a player coach or anything like that as a manager, you got a better shot at seeing God than that happening, right? So I think right now is this transition where we understand that quality is the issue, but quantity is the thing that we're still leaning on, or I'm sorry, quantity is the thing that we're still leaning on to hit our numbers, right? And so that's why it's just, I think, a lazy, like, okay, cool. Like, let's just keep throwing bodies at this, right? Let's keep throwing bodies at it. It'll flush out. Who cares? Now, the way I see the SDR role in general right now, I think it's in a transition as well. I think COVID unleashed a lot of, look, in a growth economy, the SDR model makes a shitload of sense, okay? But for those of you out there listening to this, to understand that the SDR model itself is a pure cost of sale. It's a pure cost of sale. It doesn't, since anybody who doesn't close, isn't directly relevant to closing business is a cost of sale, okay? Marketing, cost of sale. You know what I mean? Like there's all these different pieces there. So, it's necessary. But the reason that the SDR model works in a growth economy is because the added benefit, it's not just the meetings that the SDRs are driving. It's the added benefit of the SDR growing into an AE and having the company be able to pull in cheap resources early, beat the shit out of them, train them on basically, you know what I mean? And then grow them. Cause it's not cheap to hire a baller mid-level sales rep. It's just not. Mm-hmm. Right. And you're taking a chance on that mid-market or, you know, mid-level sales rep who's a baller, because now you're going to pay that kid 200-400 G's. And you probably are not going to figure out that they're good for 6 to 12 months. You know what I mean? And then you're screwed. Mm-hmm. Whereas you can see, okay, this kid takes a beating. This kid gets it. All right, cool. Let's now graduate this kid. Right. So there's that additional benefit that the SDR model brings to a growth organization, SaaS company. Right. Segmentation of roles makes all the sense in the world. I've always felt like, though, that segmentation was not exactly customer centric, right? Because nobody wants to be passed off three times before they actually talk to somebody who knows what the fuck they're talking about. Also, because with all the technologies and the sales lofts and all that other stuff to the world, a lot of what the SDR historically did is now being automated, right? So these cadences, you layer on top artificial intelligence. So my belief is that we're going to move back to full cycle sales. We're going to move, like, SDRs and BDRs are going to move under sales in general. And I'm already seeing it. More companies that I see, as it stands today, okay, and this is kind of, there's going to be other evolutions of it. But as it stands today, the model, I think, is the SDRs and the BDRs are going to move under sales, marketing and operations. And they're going to be playing with all these tools, with all this ABM stuff and with all this, you know, cadence tools and insights and analytics and that type of stuff, and being able to tweak and whatever, and then really driving high quality leads to the inside sales team. And the inside sales team is going to be full cycle sales, right? Where they're going to take those leads given by marketing with SDR supporting marketing, and they're going to take those meetings and run them full cycle sales and then evolve from there. So that's where I see it moving to. And that's where I see it moving right now to. So what does that mean for SDRs? That means I think it still provides a really interesting platform to figure out where you want to be in business. Because I think now it's going to lead to, you can get in as an SDR, low barrier to entry, and then you can determine, hey, I really like the ops and I really like the ops side of this house and looking at the analytics, or I really like the marketing side of this piece, or man, that sales side, really, I got a taste for that. I want to go do that, right? So I actually think it's going to be good from a career progression standpoint. The question is where do those full cycle sales reps come from? Because back in my day, that was it. We didn't have the segmentation. It was like, here's your territory, here's your quota, John, giddy up. And the benefit of that is we evolved as sales reps a lot faster as full cycle sales reps. But the negative of that is way more people got out of sales faster too, because they got in saying, holy shit, I can't do all this stuff. I'm out of here. But the ones who got it were the ones who were, you know, excelling.
Yeah, I think it's a mindset thing too. Like, we can look at it at like customer acquisition costs. I get it. Like, why do we need SDRs? But what if we train them in a way where they're an arm of our sales organization, where they're going to step into a marketing role or an AE role? Now it becomes important for me to develop these people. And I think of like compensation, I bring that up because I think it's a simple way. Like, someone will be invested in a deal closing if they get paid a percentage of close one revenue. Yeah. Like, as a result, I'm going to take an interest. I'll probably collaborate with my AE to like a higher degree. But like, why is that like a foreign concept? Like, you and I can like shout from the hills about that, but like, why is that a foreign concept to say, hey, instead of looking at this as a $30,000 investment to create leads, how can I invest $300,000 over the next 4 years and get the most value I can out of this individual?
It's because I'm going to go back to being lazy. I am the benefactor of this weird model that we're in right now.
True.
Okay.
You're like, keep doing it, companies. Keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, no, let me take this angle to it, which is Salesforce. Okay. Been one of my biggest customers for 10 years. I train Salesforce how to sell. That's one of my taglines, right? There's a whole shitload of SaaS companies that want to be exactly like Salesforce. So they call me up. Hey, John, we heard you train Salesforce. Can you come train us? I'm like, okay, do you need training? What's your, you know what I mean? And I'm like, can we maybe talk a little bit about it? And don't get me wrong, people don't just bang it down my door like I want to, but just in a general sense, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, and so predictable revenue, it's fucking whatever, okay, from a book standpoint, right place, right time, good for you. But every single SaaS company like takes that off the shelf and says, this is what our model should be. Should it? Is that the right model for you? I don't, you know what I mean? But people go and they do what they think they're supposed to do because they're trying to replicate success. And they're looking for the shortcuts to skip the line a little bit to jump that, right? And so that's why they look at it. And historically, SDRs have been $30,000, you know, $40,000 a year resources that we beat the shit out of. We put behind the phones and they last as long as they last. And if some of them make it, some of them do. If some of them don't, some of them don't. Who cares? You know what I mean? But that's the prevailing mentality. And so I think, you know, the people who get it, you see the people who get it right now. It's because they're adjusting. Like, I'll give you a quick example with SDR teams right now. Like, right now, I'm venturing to guess that there's a bunch of SDR teams right now that are in a panic mode because the CFO is all of a sudden asking for data around, and the VP of sales usually was not paying attention to too much. You know what I mean? It was kind of like, hey, yeah, okay, you got your KPIs. Just make sure you're hitting the numbers. But now the CFO is like, what value would we getting out of that? And VPs of sales don't have good answers for it. They're like, oh, no, we need them because I don't basically want my AEs to prospect because they suck at it, right? So that's like the kind of, that's the answer there. But they if they looked at it differently and said, let's restructure the focus. So here's the three things that anybody's looking for right now, right? One is revenue, obviously. Everybody's looking for, how do we find revenue? Two is, how do we find meetings that will lead to revenue, right? So like the company, like reset your ICP. But the third is insights. Because if you're not agile right now in your business, if you are not a scientist and looking at the trends of where your conversion, who's your fastest deal cycle now, who are the personas, what are the, you know what I mean? Like, all the, like, you need to be reassessing your entire sales process right now. Who's your new ICP? What are their new priorities? Where are the customers that are doing business, right? So what we're doing is, for instance, instead of the typical top-down approach where you force an SDR to make a phone call into a VP of sales of a mid-market enterprise company, and no fucking VPs of sales wants to talk to a 22-year-old kid who doesn't know what they're talking about. I'm sorry. It just doesn't. I don't see. And look, I'm going to put myself in that bucket. I'm 44 years old. I'm a CEO of my own little company. The last thing I want to do is talk to some 22-year-old kid who's going to ask me bant questions and then put, you know, and then hand me over to somebody that I don't even remember why I'm meeting with them. Like, that, I don't see, I don't see any value in that conversation, right? So that's why these executives who are telling their, hey, instead of making 50 dials, now you got to make 100 because I know the numbers are down. So make more dials, like get more conversations with those people. Like that's stupid. Yeah. Instead, what we're doing is we're restructuring our SDR model where like Morgan and James, right? So Morgan's kind of effectively the AE, James is the SDR BDR. Mm-hmm. What we're doing here is we're saying, all right, let's pick an account once. And so instead of the top down, we're going bottom up. Right. Insights. James is now calling into the individuals, right? Of like individuals within the organizations, individual sales reps, and asking them, hey, what's going on? Like, what do you need? What are the challenges? That type of thing. And then collecting all that information while he's doing research on the account itself. At the end of the month, they're powwowing and saying, okay, or at the end of the week, they're saying, okay, what'd you learn, right? Now, Morgan then takes that information that all the stuff that James learned. And then the following week, Morgan then uses that to go up to the senior level and say, hey, we've been talking to 10, 15, 20 of your reps. And they're telling us that their main challenges are boom, boom, and boom. We got a solution for that. So we are unleashing, we are relaxing the goals of an SDR on qualified meetings with power and blah, blah, blah. And saying, yes, that's still a part of it. But also, if you fill the database with this much information, these many names, this much, you know what I mean? We talk all the time about people having a hard time with quality of data. Well, guess what? Spend one day a week of your SDRs just looking for contact information to enrich your existing database. You already have the asset and the resource there. Why go out to Zoom Info and spend $50,000 to get somebody to enrich your database when you're paying people who do that for a living? Yeah. So that's my point is like we need to restructure and rethink of what an SDR is and the value that an SDR brings. And it's not just about getting qualified meetings with tier one accounts and executives in those tier one accounts. Because if that's your metric right now, you should fire all your SDRs tomorrow.
Yeah. And the way I kind of look at it too is I think sometimes companies, I don't believe, understand what they're trying to accomplish with SDRs. Like one day it will be like they're just another, you know, leg of the marketing department. Yeah. Then the other day they're being AEs essentially, you know, like, so why don't we just have either, you know, full cycle AEs or implore SDRs to create content and, like you were saying, like create, be the face of a company. Like you have people like Sarah and Morgan, like these, you know, and these people pop, these employees are your brand. Like implore them to do that or teach these motherfuckers how to sell.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Like either like, and that's the thing about brand right now, which is crazy that I'm watching, like people who led with brand, but don't have any skill behind it are getting exposed. You know what I mean? So that's why it's really critical to show people how to build their brand in an authentic way and not just to get followers. And that takes some teaching, that takes some guidance, that takes some structure, right? To show somebody how to do it, right? Because very few people are like Morgan, where they're just inherently like they wanted to do it and he's, you know, he loves video and all that other stuff and he just kind of had his, he found his voice, right? Most other people are kind of sitting there like, ah, shit, what do I say? What do I do? I don't know. But yeah, you put them on, you give them that guidance and you put them, you know, out there, then all of a sudden you're going to see, start to see a lot more value than just the individual meeting that they may or may not get.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of like just dialing back for a second to the individual rep, like what can these SDRs be doing knowing that the economy is uncertain, like their job's kind of expendable, like we don't know where this role is transitioning to, like what's going to give them value, whatever happens in this economy, so that they can be sales or reps or marketers.
Learn how to sell. Like if you want to be in sales, okay, if you are sitting there saying, I like this. This get my ass kicked every day is something I can deal with. I see the upside here. Then go like grab your lunch and learns with your AEs. Talk to them about what it takes to be successful in those roles. Sign up for masterclass and go, you know, for instance, for $15 a month, go watch Chris Voss's masterclass on, you know what I mean? That's like one of the most bananas thing you can get for $15. You know what I mean? Sign up for whatever course it is, jump on a podcast, listen to that, like just get better and try shit all the time and be conscious and proactive about your development. You know, people like, I'll give you a quick example, like, you know, Owler, I talk about a lot of times in my training, like Owler and Feedly and Crystal Knows and all these tools, right? Well, some of them you have to pay for, right? Yes, you can get the free version, but you know, Owler, the pro version is $30 a month. And I get reps being like, oh man, like, oh, I wish my company would pay for that. Are you out of your fucking mind? Take the $30 out of your goddamn pocket. Like one
meeting set that they get, and they're like, I don't want to spend $30 setting 5 more meetings.
Right? It's like go, like if I'm sitting there with a rep, like, let's put it this way. If you're out looking for a job right now, there's two, you know, first of all, it went from a buyer centric market to a seller centric. So I'm sorry. It went from a employer driven market to an employee. Vice versa. I'm fucking it all up. It was an employee driven market.
That's what editing's for.
Yeah. You know? But the employee driven market, like there was millions of, there wasn't enough talent out there. So I could go kind of call my shots and I could jump from now. It's the exact opposite. Now companies have 8 billion options. Right. And if I'm a VP of sales sitting there interviewing for reps, and I'm going to ask you, all right, Eric, you know, what? You got laid off. Kind of sucks, man. COVID. I get it. Totally understand. Right. What have you been doing with your time between now and then? That's the first question I'm going to ask you. And if your answer to that is, well, you know, I've been kind of just taking a step back and really just kind of relaxing a little bit. I was on the grind for a little bit too long, even though I'm only 22 years old. You know, that grind really crushed me over the past 2 years of being an SDR, man. That was brutal. Yeah,
my back
so
hurts,
yeah. I needed a break. And, you know, I've just been kind of, you know, just really, you know, focusing on myself, right? And you know, Netflix and, I like that's how long this interview is going to last, right? But if you're like, well, John, I signed up for Masterclass and I took Chris Voss. Have you taken Chris Voss's Masterclass, man? His book fucking Never Split the Difference. That's bananas, right? And then I actually sat and I got certified with the Jay Barrows training because I signed up for, he's got this new platform. It's $420 a year. And it was, I couldn't believe it. It's the same training I could get for Salesforce and all that other stuff. And I sat on these podcasts and I joined this and I joined that. And I've been learning along the way about what it really takes to be an AE and what this new market is going to, that's the kid I'm going to hire all day long. You know what I mean? So I guess the short answer to your question is just a constant drive to get better and better and the confidence to try new shit and be okay with failing. You know what I mean? Like the more you tell somebody what you failed on and what you tried and failed on, the more they're going to pay attention to you. You tell somebody about all your wonderful successes and all that other shit, whatever, man. You know, 120% of quota, good for you. You know how many sales reps are out there saying they were 127% of quota before they got laid off? Like a billion of them at this point. Tell me, what was your biggest failure? Why did you feel like you got fired and nobody else did? You know, or that there was other people that didn't get fired. Tell me that story. Because your reflection of that, about why you think you got let go and some others didn't, that's going to tell me more about you than any number on a piece of paper ever would.
Yeah. I think people just view you more as human when you come out.
Totally.
And you just put all your failures and your, you know, the path that you were on, it, you know, if it's a hard road traveled, people are going to respect that more rather than just like, oh, I'm this perfect person. And, you know, I have issue with that all the time. And that kind of brings me to my last question before we get you out of here. Mm-hmm. But just about in content in general, like we keep telling people like produce content. I think some people are just incapable of it. Like, and I think maybe we need to kind of guide people and when we say just create content, because I think it has like flooded the market, saturated it.
Mm-hmm.
But what would you give someone as like a content creator, like advice on, you know, how to build a brand and stuff like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I don't,
it's a horrible question, but I want
to, no.
This is for me personally. Like,
yeah, no, I actually don't think you need to be the content creator. I think some people are just not cut out for it. You know what I mean? I think the easiest way is to be the content curator. Right. Mm-hmm. Is consumed. So this is where social selling flipped for me. Right. Because when social selling first came out, I was like, great. Yet another thing I got to do to be successful in sales. Fantastic. Add it to the fucking list here, you know. And the whole idea of tweeting and posting and building a following just was like, just this is stupid. But where it flipped for me was when I started looking at it as educating myself first. I should be educating myself on the trends of the industry. I should be educating myself on the personas that I'm reaching out to. I should be educating myself on the, you know, the all that stuff. Right. So when I started looking at it as educating myself first and then consuming content that I and my audience was most likely interested in, right? Well, then when I read an article that I thought was badass, then I would share it with a little bit of context on top of it, right? Hey, really interesting article here by so-and-so. My key takeaways were X, Y, and Z. Or here's what I disagree with about this article or whatever it is. That way, first of all, you cross off about 50 things all at the same time. Business acumen, you learn. Building your personal brand, that type of stuff. And you know, a few other things from a prospecting standpoint. So now, because look, I write a blog on a weekly basis. A pain in the ass. Straight up pain in the ass. I've been doing it for 6 years. I'm running out of shit to say, right? So I spend about an hour sitting down thinking about what I'm going to write and how I'm going to write it and what's valuable enough, right? Then I send it over to my team. They SEO it. They do all this other stuff. So we're like 2 to 3 hours into a legit one blog post, right, per week. Now, say Eric, you and I are connected, right? Mm-hmm. And I post out my blog and you read it. And so you like it. You enjoy it, right? So yeah. you share it, okay? And with a little bit of, hey, really good, interesting article by John here, da 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 da. And Tyler is connected to you, but not to me, right? So Tyler now sees my blog post because you shared it, and Tyler likes it. Who does he thank?
I guess me, but yes. I think people are, yeah.
How
yeah.
often?
But yeah, I would think like, thanks, John, but nope. I get what you're saying. Like,
watch,
yeah, thanks,
pay attention to it. Pay attention to it. You will never see, if I share a piece of content, you then share it out and Tyler gets it. Tyler's never going to reply all, because Tyler knows you. He's thanking you because you and him are connected. Tyler doesn't know me. So he's going to say, holy shit, awesome, Eric, awesome article there. Thanks for sharing, Eric. Yeah. So you get all the credit. I did all the work. Now, don't get me wrong, Tyler, I might get another follower. Tyler might come in and say, oh, I really like John's voice, but he's not going to say, holy shit, thank you so much, John Barrows, for writing that article. That was one of the best articles I've ever read. He's going to say, thanks so much, Eric, for sharing that article. I really appreciate it. Easy way to build your brand in a very authentic way while learning.
And you don't have to be smart to do
it. Nope.
Yeah, just add like a little piece of knowledge, like provide like one piece of value to the post.
Yeah, one takeaway, one people, whatever, right?
Yeah, I think people miss that a lot on LinkedIn where they'll just share something.
Nah,
like they'll
don't
take
do
what
that.
A company does and they'll just share it, or someone that something does, someone does, and they don't add anything to it. I think that's the worst way to go about creating content on social media, obviously. But so yeah, I think that's our time for today, John. Cool. This has been, I feel like I went through my own masterclass for this. I mean, this was amazing. definitely look up to everything you do. Make It Happen Mondays is one of my favorite sales podcasts out there. Maybe just one of my favorite podcasts in general. I love everything you guys have done with branding, and obviously your content is fire from the sales training aspect of it. So we really appreciate you coming on. I think we had a great conversation today. I think this could be helpful for not only SDRs, but just everyone in sales organizations and leaders alike. So appreciate it.
Thank you, man. One quick note on that podcast, just to put a pin on, you don't have to be the content creator. The reason I started my podcast is because I don't learn by reading books. I don't learn by, I learn by talking to people who are smarter than me.
Same.
So what I did was I started my podcast for a very selfish reason, because that's how I learn. And I'm genuinely curious. And so I would get people who are smarter than me and I would just ask them questions that I would want to learn about. And it just so happens that my audience usually wants to learn about the same stuff that I'm trying to learn about, right? So with me interviewing and learning, I'm able to share content and build my brand.
Yeah, I went from a fired SDR to people coming to me asking about sales advice. And honestly, like, I wouldn't have felt comfortable with that, you know, 3 months ago. I had ideas, but now they're fleshed out and I've learned from all these experienced leaders. So I actually feel confident in that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's awesome. It's been amazing. Yeah. You got anything to say, Tyler?
No, man, just echoing your sentiment. It's been awesome. And it's cool to hear that that's kind of your thought process, because that's how I got into this. Like, let me just get smarter people and ask them relevant questions. And I bet you there's a couple of thousand people that are also curious about the answer. But I mean, I've just developed myself so much as a result. Like, even if I grow no brand, get no follows, it's like I got people that taught me real sales advice. People like Ian Koniak, who you'll pay $1,000 an hour to get sales advice from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I had Chris Voss on my podcast. I'm like, and I could listen to that guy for a year. I'm like, oh my God, this guy is so fucking brilliant. You know what I mean? Like, his brain works at a different level than mine. And why not? You know? So, I mean, because I always look at things as like, what's the worst case scenario? Let's play this out for everybody listening right now. Use all brand building, whatever. What's the absolute worst case scenario? Yeah. Nobody follows you. Nobody cares. Okay. Well, okay, based on that, you still learned something, you got yourself out there, you built your confidence, those type of things. Like, okay, so you only got 3 likes on a post. Who gives a shit? You know what I mean? If you're doing it and you have impact on one person's life, because you shared a piece of content that maybe somebody who's coming up behind you took and said, oh, that makes sense. Now it's worth it in every way, shape, and form. So why not?
Absolutely. Do you have a favorite episode? Do you have a favorite guest that you've had on or a favorite episode?
I gotta say Chris Voss. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of unfair because, like, you know, he's at a different level.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
But do you have any projects that you want to plug or anywhere?
Yeah,
the
on-demand platform, man. That's what we're pushing hard right now. It has, so if you go to the jbarrows.com, you hit training for individuals, it takes you to that on-demand page. It's Netflix for sales. We try to really up the game right now with content and the delivery of it. And it's got everything that we do. So it's the filling the funnel program. It's the driving a close program. It's Morgan social selling. It's like every tip, every video, every webinar we've ever done. They're all in there. And we're going to be constantly putting in new content in there. It's all for $420 a year with $20 going to charity. So anybody has a problem with that can kiss my ass.
All right. Well, thanks, John, for coming on today. It's been an awesome time chatting with you. I just want to thank everyone who has made it this far. Special shout out to our partnerships with SDR Nation, JB Sales Training, Great Insight, and Pre-Hire. Again, check out links in the description if you want to learn more about those companies and our affiliate programs so we can get you guys some discount codes. If you are enjoying the podcast, be sure to leave it a rate and a written review. Really helps us out. We'll see you on the next one. Thanks.